Brought to you by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Seeing what others have seen, but uncovering what others may not. Global research that helps you harness disruption. Voted top global research firm 5 years running. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated.
There was like a Family Guy episode when they had the family of, like, the Simpsons family came to Rhode Island, and I can't believe I just admitted on this podcast that I actually watch Family Guy sometimes.
Hello and welcome back to Bloomberg Benchmark, a show about the global economy. It's Thursday, October 13th. I'm Scott Landman, an economics editor with Bloomberg News in Washington.
And I'm Kate Smith, an editor with Bloomberg in New York.
Today, we're going to be talking all about the cost of childcare and why it's an important economic issue. But first, I wanted to say that I'm even more excited than usual about today's show. Do you know why, Kate?
I think I do, but keep going.
Well, you know, I don't know if you're too young for this, but there's a great tradition of crossover episodes in TV shows. You'd have the character from one show go on another show, and then the network would promote it as a quote unquote very special episode. One of the most famous was when Steve Urkel went on Full House. That was a major event in the history of television. Did you know that, Kate?
I didn't know that it was a very special event in television history, but I think I have seen this because there was like a Family Guy episode when they had the family of, like, the Simpsons family came to Rhode Island, and I can't believe I just admitted on this podcast that I actually watch Family Guy sometimes.
It's amazing. It's wonderful.
It is. It's really good. Well, all right. Well, in that tradition, so Scott brought this up. In that tradition, today we're going to be giving our listeners our very own crossover episode of Benchmark. So we have a number of excellent podcasts here at Bloomberg right now. I'm not sure if you guys realize that. One of them is called Game Plan, and that's all about life at the office. So Rebecca Greenfield is one of their co-hosts, and she's with us today in the studio. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Glad you could be with us. So this has been getting lost in all the madness of this election campaign, but childcare is actually the one issue that both candidates sort of agree on, at least in that it's very expensive and the government should help Americans by defraying some of the cost. That's what already happens in a lot of European countries that are heavily subsidized childcare, especially in Scandinavia and Western Europe.
Exactly. And Donald Trump released a plan last month to tackle the cost through tax deductions and rebates and a mandated maternity leave. Now, Hillary Clinton, on the other side, has also pledged universal pre-kindergarten access, an expansion of the child tax credit, and scholarships for parents who are in school.
Now, as my D.C. colleague Michelle Jamrisco has reported, a recent study showed full-time care in centers for young children costs almost $10,000 a year, about what you'd pay for tuition at an in-state college. And if you want an in-home caregiver, like a nanny, it'll cost you around $28,000. That's more than half of median U.S. household income. On the other hand, you have childcare workers making very low wages. Just under $10 an hour is the median wage in the United States. And as a point of comparison, people who walk dogs make more money. And you're kind of familiar with that, right, Kate?
Yeah, as I can personally attest, and my bank account can personally attest, dog walking, especially here in New York, is really expensive. Just as a way of comparison, my dog walker is about $50 a day. And my dog is not the only one, so he's collecting that from a few other people, too. So it's pretty lucrative business here.
Well, we're going to try to reconcile all these strings today in talking about childcare. And later on, we'll talk with the head of a company that runs more than 200 childcare centers in the U.S. And he'll tell us about how this all came to be. But first, Rebecca, in your day job as a reporter, you've written a lot about this issue. What have you found? What can you tell us?
Yeah, so one thing that I tried to find out is just like why childcare is getting so much more expensive and is so expensive. Like you said, it's really frustrating for parents, especially working parents. And it's one of these things that it's very hard to make more efficient. Even though you've mentioned that labor costs are very low per person, it gets very expensive really fast because, you know, there are regulations for really good reasons about how many people can watch your children and the real estate of the space. And it's state by state, so it's a bit confusing, but you can only bring down labor costs so much for a childcare center. So that's definitely one thing that I found that's keeping the price up. Another possibility for driving the price up is that the only way really to bring it down would be government funding. And as you mentioned, here in the U.S., there's a lot of debate about how to do that. And the candidates have been talking about it, but so far it's been like a really piecemeal process. And for now, people have to rely on their own money, or if they're very, very lucky, their employers to offer them some sort of help.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this some more. I mean, as you guys may know, in the interest of full disclosure, I do have a personal stake in this issue. I have two young daughters, age 4 and 2, because I live in Maryland and we don't have universal pre-K there or other kinds of subsidies for young children. They're both in private preschool now, which is taking up a very significant chunk of my income. And I'm looking forward to next year when my older daughter's in kindergarten and some of that will start to go away. But anyway, I'm lucky that I can afford this anyway and send my kids to a decent place. But Rebecca, how do most parents of young kids make it work?
It's really difficult for a lot of people. I mean, I've heard of a lot of families that have two working parents where both the parents work to basically pay for daycare. I mean, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. If, you know, one person could stay home and care for the kids, but both people want to work, and so they have to work, but basically that entire salary is just going towards daycare. So that's one way people do it. I mean, there are some programs here in New York. We do have pre-K, and there's Head Start programs, but it is really difficult for a lot of families, and there have been a lot of stories written about people struggling to pay for childcare.
It seems that from what I'm hearing, and I don't have children yet, so I haven't had to deal with this yet, but it seems like it's kind of like a state-by-state approach. Is that right?
Yeah, because we don't have federal laws for most of these things, much like maternity leave, family leave, paid sick leave, the changes are happening on municipal and state levels.
Interesting. And the funding then comes from state and local taxes only?
Yeah, it really depends on the program.
Rebecca, what about companies that have childcare facilities in-house? It seems like maybe that used to be more common, but now it's dwindled to almost nothing. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I wrote a story recently about that, how, you know, and it was never a hugely popular benefit, but it was something that a chunk of companies were offering, and now something like 2% of companies offer a subsidized or unsubsidized childcare at or near a workplace, which is a benefit that employees obviously really like. It's just, again, so expensive and complicated for companies to offer it that even now, as we're seeing an increase in a lot of benefits like this, like we have seen an increase in certain industries of maternity leave and parental leave and family-friendly benefits because they know that's what employees want. Daycare on site just hasn't picked up because it's like a huge headache for companies, and they'd rather just the way more popular way to deal with this, and what we have here at Bloomberg, is that you just can put tax deducted money towards your kids' childcare,
but only $5,000 a year, as I've become well aware.
Right, yeah, that's the limit. Yeah, so that's like a much easier benefit. You know, they don't have to worry about staffing or liability of having kids nearby or all those things that come with the complications of running a daycare.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to get some answers straight from an authoritative source. His name is Scott Cotter, and he's the president and CEO of Child Care Network.
Brought to you by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Seeing what others have seen, but uncovering what others may not. Global research that helps you harness disruption. Voted top global research firm 5 years running. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated.
Welcome back. We're joined now by someone who can give us an insider's view of childcare costs. Scott Cotter is the president and CEO of Childcare Network. It has 249 childcare centers across 13 states in the southeastern U.S., from Texas to Florida and all the way up to Richmond, Virginia, not too far from D.C. He's joining us now by phone from his headquarters in Columbus, Georgia. Scott, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Glad to have you. Now, let me ask you first, how would you break down your monthly fees? You were telling me earlier it's around, people pay an average of around $700 a month. Where do those dollars go into your costs when it comes to labor, facilities, administration, compliance, insurance, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you would expect, you know, in a service business like this, we employ a lot of teachers. So, you know, our number one cost is labor. And it's roughly, you know, about half of our total cost, you know, overall in terms of the, you know, direct operating cost, you know, of a school, you know, the administrators, you know, through the, you know, teachers and other floating staff, you know, that we employ. You know, facility cost, you're going to be, you know, another, you know, 20%, and that's going to be roughly, you know, the rents on the properties, the property taxes, insurances, you know, those costs. And then you've got another 20% in a variety of variable costs from food, your supplies, consumables, utilities, repairs and maintenance on the facility, you know, those types of things. And then our corporate, you know, administrative costs probably run between, you know, 5 to 6.5%, you know, per year. And that's generally how things, you know, break down. I mean, it's certainly, but obviously the number one component is the labor force, for sure.
And which of those costs have seen the fastest increase in recent years? Has anything been slowing or falling? And where have you been able to save money?
Well, I'd say, you know, on the savings side, you know, generally food costs have been coming down or at least been much more stable. You know, we do provide also an after-school program. So we've got, you know, a fleet of 600 buses that are on the road every day. And so, you know, gas costs over the last 5 years have been up and down. And certainly we've been in a down phase, you know, for the last, you know, 18 months or so. And I think some of that throughput has helped, you know, on the food cost side as well. But even though, you know, individual unit costs for food are down, you know, the regulatory changes that USDA made, you know, with the meal components, you know, we're actually investing in higher quality, you know, food that we're serving today with the, you know, the changes in the food pyramid. So while the unit costs are less, you know, we're actually putting more dollars towards food associated with the menu changes, you know, that have been made. And then on the labor side, certainly if you go back to, you know, coming out of the recession in 2011 and for a childcare business, that's definitely a, you know, a double-edged sword in that, you know, it's jobs that drive the need for parents, you know, to seek out, you know, childcare services. And so, you know, demand coming out of the recession was certainly lower, but at a 10% unemployment, you know, the labor pool that we had to draw from was, you know, significantly greater. And we had, you know, many more opportunities on the employment side, particularly with, you know, higher credentialed folks who may have been displaced, you know, out of the public school systems and that type of thing. So, but really, you know, over the last, you know, 5 to 6 years, as the, you know, economy has recovered and the labor pool has tightened up, and we've really seen, you know, pretty significant tightening, you know, in the last, you know, 18 months. And so really there's been a real driver on, you know, our cost per hour of labor in the last, you know, couple of years as we continue to try to, you know, maintain the, you know, the quality of our staff and particularly the teacher credential component. Because one thing that, you know, most states are not changing the minimum requirements, but they've instituted what are called voluntary quality rating and improvement systems, QRIS systems. And so we do our best to participate in those systems have been, you know, highly successful. But, you know, one of the measurements that they use is the education level of your staff. And in order to score high in those measurements, so if I have an associate degree teacher and she were to leave, then I've got to go back into the workforce and try to replace that individual with an associate degree teacher in order to maintain my current rating. And that's where we're seeing, you know, significant challenges today in replacing someone, you know, on the higher end of the credentials and ultimately, you know, the incurring higher costs to employ that person moving in. And I'd also say while we, you know, the cost per, you know, labor hour are going up today pretty rapidly, our business has just become, you know, so much more complex. And I don't know that this is necessarily specific just to, you know, childcare network, but we have lots of just other programs outside of just childcare for working parents. So we're involved in Head Start, Early Head Start, state pre-K programs, and, you know, in a variety of other, you know, very specialized programs. And, you know, each one of those comes with its own unique set of programmatic requirements and regulations. And so ultimately, we're just having to employ more people to, you know, run our business, to, you know, ensure, you know, the quality control side, to invest in professional development, you know, with our teachers from a training perspective. So the business has definitely gotten more complex, and ultimately, you know, we're just generally, it takes more people, you know, to run a high quality center.
What can I interrupt for a second? What, you know, would you say your profit margins are reasonable? Have they gotten bigger or smaller over the last 5 to 10 years?
I would just say they're stable. I mean, you know, we've managed to, you know, coming out of the recession, we've managed to grow our enrollment. So our facilities are more highly utilized. But again, these other cost drivers where we are, in, you know, investing in the quality of our programs and trying to improve, you know, our rating in these systems, it's been stable. You know, it's, you know, 3 to 5%, on the bottom line. So that's, you know, very thin margins. And again, that's across a network of, you know, 250 schools. So, you know, it's it can be, you know, somewhat variable because our in childcare, it's a very fixed cost operation. So, you know, the first 100 students in a building may not even get you to break even, depending upon, you know, what those fixed occupancy costs. So it's only the last few children in a particular classroom or, you know, across a building, you know, facility that where any margin would be generated in terms of, you know, in profits.
So this all sounds pretty reasonable the way you're describing it, even while, you know, people like to complain about the cost of childcare in this country takes up a big chunk. But it sounds like, you know, it's not a terribly, hugely profitable business, and there's all sorts of costs and issues you have to deal with. Is there anything outside of direct government subsidies or kinds of additional tax deductions that would lower the cost for the customer?
You know, unfortunately not. I mean, it's just an expensive operation to maintain. And, you know, you think about, you know, the cost of, say, a pre-K program, you know, in the public schools. Well, you know, those programs are only operating for the school day, say, six and a half hours. In childcare settings, you know, we're open for 12 hours or more per day. You know, we don't have a specific drop-off and pickup time. You know, parents, we're trying to meet a working parent's needs. So depending upon their schedules, you know, children are coming in and out of the program, you know, throughout the day. And having to have a staffing model that meets those, you know, parents' needs, it's pretty intensive, to be honest. I mean, in terms of total hourly, an hourly schedule that has to be maintained, you know, in a center. So, you know, I really think it's ultimately going to take, you know, as a country and us, you know, deciding that this, you know, certainly given all the brain research, you know, that's out there, that, you know, this is something that's very foundational. And, you know, we've got to prepare students for, you know, for kindergarten so that they're prepared for success when they enter the public school system. And, you know, today, I just don't think we are making those investments. I mean, certainly over the last 5 years, there's been a lot of talk you know, I see potential, you know, on the horizon, both candidates have somewhat promised in their campaigns, and there's been an increased focus, you know, on childcare. And
well, if I can jump in, speaking about those two campaigns, I mean, you know, they both have come out with two different approaches to pre-kindergarten care and childcare. I mean, is there one in particular that you, as a business person, prefers that you think would be better for your business?
Not specifically, because they haven't really provided a great deal of detail. I mean, one thing that I would hope that, you know, we can preserve, you know, through any additional investments that are made, whether they be federal or various state investments, is to be able to preserve parental choice. You know, I think that that a one-size-fits-all model is not going to be best, and ultimately, you know, not lead to the outcomes that, you know, that we're looking for, you know, for children. So I think that we should, you know, be able to have a variety of models and variety of settings that, you know, can, you know, that are all high quality, of course, and meet those requirements. But I think just giving parents choice in whatever systems are developed is critically important to the, you know, overall, you know, success, because I generally, you know, just believe that's important to be maintained today.
Rebecca, do you want to jump in with one question that you could not find the answer to in your previous reporting?
Yeah, so you may have alluded to some of the answers already, but I've been trying to track down why childcare costs are reportedly rising faster than inflation. It seems like maybe you think like the competitive job market might have to do with it. Are you paying your labor more?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm paying more, and I see that. And really, I think some of the data and statistics that are out there, you know, there's a lag period, and I've seen a real acceleration in those costs, you know, in the last, 24 months.
Yeah, I found that, you know, it's reported that child care workers make something like $10 an hour. It's some like really low rate, but it sounds like you pay them more than that.
No, I'd say, you know, we're in that range. I mean, we're in, depending upon an individual's credentials. And again, keep in mind that we operate in the South predominantly. You know, we are in a number of, you know, urban or metro markets, but we're also across, you know, a lot of smaller, you know, sort of second tier cities. But, you know, so we're in that $8 to $12 an hour plus, you know, range. You know, there are other benefits associated with that. And particularly, many of our teachers also have children in our centers. So they ultimately get significantly reduced, child care. So when you sort of look at that real wage, you know, if they had to place their own child in child care and then seek employment, you know, elsewhere in terms of what that might look like. But there's definitely been a real acceleration, you know, over the last, you know, 24 months in wage costs for us as we're, you know, in the market trying to compete, you know, for highly qualified staff. And then, I guess, as I said earlier, we're just employing more people because, again, the business is becoming more complex. There's so many other programmatic requirements from this program to that one that just takes more people. And in all honesty, you know, I think if you were to poll my administrators today, you know, there's pretty significant fatigue and burnout, you know, right now, you know, with them, just given, you know, all the additional responsibilities that they have today, you know, with the various, you know, oversight, you know, which is necessary. I'm not complaining about it, but it's just a significantly different environment than even just 5 years ago.
All right. Scott, we're going to have to leave it there. This has been very, very informative, and we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
And Rebecca, thank you very much for being with us, too.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, Benchmark will be back next week. And until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal and Bloomberg.com, as well as on iTunes, Pocket Cast, and Stitcher. While you're there, take a minute to rate and review the show so more listeners can find us.
And let us know what you thought of the show. You can talk to us and follow us on Twitter at Scott Landman. You can find me at By Kate Smith. You can find our guest, Rebecca, at RZ Greenfield.
And our guest company is on Twitter at @childcarenetwk. Thank you very much and see you next week.
Brought to you by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Seeing what others have seen, but uncovering what others may not. Global research that helps you harness disruption. Voted top global research firm 5 years running. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated.